From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents, context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I live in Berkeley.
Berkeley.
Berkeley, California.
Oh, right north of the LeConte Street.
I'm Ekta. I'm from Walnut Creek and also from Thailand.
Coming up, we find out why an East Bay artist is using stuff we throw away to turn trash cans into art.
Nothing is really trash that it can be reused some kind of way.
Then we'll hear about the state of the arts in the city of San Francisco.
We're investing to make sure that as cost of living go up, whether that's housing or a cup of coffee, that artists are able to stay, live, and work in San Francisco.
And we hear the answer to this week's Audiograph Mystery Sound. On that note, here's Cross Currents. Stay with us. Garbage. Our country makes a lot of it. According to the Environmental Protection Agency, every American throws away about 4.5 pounds of trash a day. And even though we may try to follow the three commandments of waste management, recycle, reduce, reuse, the garbage keeps piling up. But recently, a new term has come into vogue, upcycle. That's the idea that you can take waste materials and turn them into something valuable and even beautiful. Mosaic artist Daoud Abdullah upcycles pieces of trashed pottery, tile, mirror, and glass to make public art on garbage cans in Oakland and Richmond. KALW's Suki Lewis met up with Abdullah to see what turning trash cans into treasure cans does for a neighborhood.
Someone just threw a water bottle into Daoud Abdullah's art piece. But that's what it's for. It's a trash can. I'm on a tour of Abdullah's unconventional art gallery, The Streets of Oakland. Here in East Oakland's Brookdale neighborhood, grates cover the windows on the one-story houses. The street is noisy with buses and cars, and it's lined with trash cans, square, dull gray boxes that blend into the concrete around them. Except for this one.
Yeah, so this is the first one I did.
It's got an eye made out of mirror on one side above a red heart and the letter U, which also looks a lot like a smiley face. On another side,
so, yeah, it looks a little bit like a starfish because it's
blue.
Abdullah decorated this first can in 2006. Nobody paid him to do it or even asked him to. And his materials?
This was some tile. I was walking down the street and found a whole box of, oh, wow, I'll use it, you know. So that's how stuff like that comes about.
Abdullah says he was tired of seeing trash in the neighborhood and cleaning up other people's garbage. And he wanted to show that there's potential in the things we throw away.
Let's show trash turned into treasure, you know, that kind of thing. So there's a lot of plates and cups and, you know, stuff on that, you know.
He moved on to other cans around the neighborhood, lugging tiles, grout, and bladders of water for blocks to spread smiley faces, hearts, and peace signs around Oakland. Some of his later pieces were made by request, including this one he did for an Oakland musician.
I was working on the trash can by myself at Brookdale and High, and he drove past and goes, wow, I want one of those done in my house. Could you do it?
This can's got guitars, drums, maracas, and the words Oakland loves musica on two of the sides. And then there's a peace sign. Abdullah says while he was working on this can, the musician's son was murdered.
I mean, it was a shooting kind of thing. I just decided, well, dude, I'm going to, you know, show respect and give you a peace sign. We need it. Don't have enough of it.
Abdullah takes me to the next can near a bus stop on Seminary Avenue. The storefronts are barred up, and the only business that seems to be open is a liquor store.
The reason that I did the trash cans here, because look at it, it looks like blight. There's nothing going on here. They have no art. And it was like, man, you go all around Lake Merritt, you go all around downtown Oakland, there's pieces of art here and there, murals that are legal, you know, and you get out here and it's nothing, and the nickname of Seminary Avenue is Cemetery Avenue because all of the killing and stuff that goes on.
But something else has started going on here.
You can turn down here.
Look at that.
In front of us is a beautiful, huge mosaic flower piece someone has done on the front of their house. And to our left, I spot another decorated trash can. but it's not one of Abdullah's.
That's the ripple. It keeps going.
Abdullah calls the spread of the art form the ripple. He's keeping it going by training a new crop of artists in his studio in nearby Richmond. The place is called Bridge Storage, because it's just that, a storage business that converted a number of units into an art space and Abdullah's classroom.
If you don't work with kids, man, the art form is going to die.
Earlier this year, 12 teenagers from Gompers, the continuation high school in Richmond, came to Abdullah's studio to learn about mosaic and help make the city's trash cans a little brighter.
You saw the big mural in progress. That's my blackboard.
On a wall outside, a mosaic mural is starting to emerge of the San Francisco Bay, with the Golden Gate Bridge straddling it. Abdullah tells me the bridge is like so much of the stuff he works with.
Somebody showed up with this bridge, which was a part of San Francisco University's scoreboard. They were tearing it down, and somebody thought, oh, there's this guy that will reuse it. And so here it is. I've been reusing it.
This is where he showed the kids different techniques using materials from glass to oyster shells.
I would hope and dream that with all the kids that I'm teaching how to do this art form, that they take it to the next level. You know what I mean? Instead of a spray tag, give me a nice, you know, mosaic tag.
For the last stop on our tour, Abdullah takes me to see his most prominent can, in Richmond anyway.
So we're looking right across.
I know, looking right at City Hall.
There's a bicycle driving up one side of the can, out of a flower bed made from broken plates. And on another side,
that's tight, Rosie the Riveter,
oh, yeah,
though.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
A man standing nearby named Dre, he didn't give his last name, likes Abdullah's rendering of Rosie in blue and tan tile under the words Richmond and We Can Do It.
It definitely makes me want to put my trash in it. Really, I appreciate the culture that Richmond has put down. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's nice to see that Richmond has put efforts into something other than blood shit. You know what I'm saying?
In fact, a $3,000 grant from the city has helped fund a number of Abdullah's cans. There are now 26 in the city, from Point Richmond to downtown. Dre's friend Julian, who also didn't give his last name, hopes Abdullah will do more.
You know, they should be all over Richmond.
And that, after all, is Abdullah's mission, to give broken bits a second chance at beauty and replace blight with art.
It's a trash can, but it's been repurposed.
For Cross Currents, I'm Suki Lewis.
To see pictures of some of Abdullah's work and to learn more about the Richmond Art Center, go to kalw.org, click on Cross Currents. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. San Francisco is known to have a thriving art scene.
Pity the nation whose people are sheep and whose shepherds mislead them.
Just like suns and like moons, with the certainty of tides. Just like hope springing high, still I rise.
Chuckin', got my chips cashed in.
But rising costs in the Bay Area have forced many artists to pack up and leave town to find more affordable places to live. Tom DeCaney is the Director of Cultural Affairs at the San Francisco Arts Commission, and it's his job to understand the issues that artists and nonprofits are facing in the city. He started in 2011, hoping to turn Mid-Market into a robust arts district, protect the city's art collection, and champion arts education for youth. DeCaney sat down with KALW's Ben Trefney to talk about the state of the arts here in San Francisco.
I am curious, what defines art and an artist to you?
Wow, that's an existential question.
I mean, it's something that you actually would have to define, though, I would think, especially in granting money.
Well, we at the Arts Commission use a panel process so that we actually bring in experts from the field, working artists, community representatives, to form a panel so that that panel is collectively bringing together their identity of what an artist might be or what a quality artist might be. So we look at a portfolio, so oftentimes using artists' demonstrated history in San Francisco. We often require that they have been residents for 3 years in many of our guidelines to make sure they're established here. We want to support new up-and-coming artists and people new to San Francisco, but we also want to make sure that they're rooted here and that we're investing in San Francisco artists. In terms of kind of the existential definition, you know, I think I see the difference between art and entertainment as, you know, entertainment is something that reinforces our ideas of the world or our value systems, and I think art challenges it. It's a kind of the intellectual endeavor by which we're looking at the human condition and reflecting on it, but also trying to kind of conceive of what it means for us as we look at our quality of life moving forward.
So your definition would maybe discount sort of pop art, I would guess, to some extent, because that might... I'm thinking of, say, popular movies or blockbusters or stuff like that, where your typical rom-com with a basic storyline that's pretty predictable as compared with, say, I don't know, something that has a more esoteric or unexpected vision.
Well, I think at the Arts Commission, we see shared value in creative industries, but we do define that role of the artist separate from entertainment. So in our own investments and grants to artists and arts organizations, we do look in that context of art as I described, and we do not fund commercial enterprises or entertainment ventures that might be more commercial. However, I think that partnership between arts and entertainment, nightlife, whether that's DJs in the nightlife industries of San Francisco, those are as much a part of our identity and our city making as the artists that live here. And so I see a real alliance to our partners at the Entertainment Commission and people who are working in nightlife and in the service industries as just a way of life in San Francisco that has been defined over time that is worth preserving.
I would imagine that some artists would, you know, if they are turned down for a grant, that they might question the arbiters of taste on the San Francisco Arts Commission. Do you end up getting some, you know, pushback on that kind of front?
We do occasionally have appeals, and that's part of the value of a panel process is that it's not just our staff or the sitting commissioners who make these decisions, but these are changing panels that change all the time with new people from the community, from different arts institutions and other individual artists who are collectively making these decisions. But those groups of people change over time so that it's not just one individual. It's certainly not me, and it's not just staff at the Arts Commission.
It's not just the cool kids.
It's not just the cool kids.
That's Tom DeCaney. He is the Director of Cultural Affairs for the San Francisco Arts Commission. So one other area that's changing quite a lot in San Francisco is the mid-market area. I know that the American Conservatory Theater has a new venue, the Strand, that's opening up there. Tell me what you see as the development of this, which used to be really a thriving theater district of San Francisco.
Yeah, well, we've seen some exciting developments throughout Central Market. So as you mentioned, the American Conservatory Theater is about to complete a historic restoration of the Strand Theater, which had been vacant for a number of years. They've also innovated with a really exciting program at their costume shop, which is a very small kind of intimate space where they've opened up to the community through some funding, through grants for the arts in the city to make it accessible at very low cost and even free to some, you know, emerging artists to have that space also on Market Street. And I also think the Community Arts Stabilization Trust, which is a new endeavor to acquire art spaces and keep them deed restricted and dedicated to arts and culture use, has been really effective. They've recently helped the Luggage Store purchased their space at 6th Street and Market. They're a long-time visual arts organization in Central Market, been there over 20 years, very deeply rooted in the community, and making sure that they retain their space. They also subleased to Hospitality House, which is a great social service organization that integrates the arts into their work in the community. But also to acquire, the Community Arts Stabilization Trust has also helped acquire 80 Turk, which is an old theater that had most recently been a porn theater, and they're now working in partnership with Counterpulse to make that the home of Counterpulse. So both Luggage Store and Counterpulse will, over the next 7 to 10 years, buy back those buildings from the Community Arts Stabilization Trust, therefore reinvigorating the trust for another arts investment elsewhere, either in Central Market or in the city, but keeping ownership of those buildings in a deed-restricted arts and culture use. So we know that Luggage Store and Counterpulse would have that art space moving on to the future, but the funds could also go into other arts investments.
When you look at the Central Market area, which is an area that, was losing a lot of that historic culture over decades, I think, and many mayors tried to rebuild it in some way. I mean, Mayor Lee has been successful, and a lot of people fault him, actually, because of the payroll tax that he put in place that drew Twitter and some of these other companies there. How do you see this area then, though? Because it's pretty controversial.
Yeah, well, I think economies are complex, and we need to look at them as ecosystems, and we need to look at definitely where the challenges are and where, as a city, we need to invest to support organizations, individuals that might not have a level playing field or might be challenged. During an economic downturn, that might also be incentivizing our economy through inviting tech companies to come to a historically kind of challenged neighborhood and to invest there. But I think it's a much more complex situation where we're seeing this, again, reurbanization of cities around the country. And I personally don't believe that single exemption created the challenge that sometimes people want to kind of blame for the broader issues. I think we live in a global economy. There's capital transitions, whether that might be Chinese investors buying real estate in San Francisco. The variables are very complicated, and I think we have to make sure that we don't kind of try to demonize a single industry for the fact that they're coming to San Francisco to find a new life and to find innovation here. I was that person in 1998, and I think we want the city to be a welcoming place for newcomers, whether you're coming from Central America or you're coming here to work in tech, or whether you're a queer person from the Midwest like myself who wanted a better life to come west. We want to incentivize that, but we also need smart urban growth so that we can make the city have high-quality transportation, affordable housing, and these are going to be solutions we're going to need to work on for the long term.
That's Tom DeCaney, Director of Cultural Affairs of the San Francisco Arts Commission, talking with KALW's Ben Trefney. If you're an artist, we want to hear what you think the city should be doing to support you. Leave your ideas on our feedback line, 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106, and we may get your call on the air. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. And now it's time for Audiograph, the Bay Area's sonic signature. Here's Audiograph's Julie Kane to bring you the answer to this week's mystery sound.
Thanks, Hannah. All week long, we've been playing you this sound. We asked you what that was and where we recorded it. We sent Judy Silber from KALW's Spiritual Edge Project to bring us the story behind the sound.
I'm Yonatan Cohen, and I serve as the rabbi of Congregation Beth Israel in Berkeley, which is Berkeley's modern Orthodox community. In just a few moments, I'm going to be blowing the shofar, which is a ram's horn, which Jews traditionally blow as a mitzvah, as the main commandment of Rosh Hashanah. When I blow the shofar, I'm going to follow the traditional sound that we make in the days leading up to Rosh Hashanah, which is tekiya, shvarim trua, tekiya. Tekiya is a long sound, a long flat sound. Shvarim is three sounds, followed by nine speedy sounds, followed by the tkiya again, which is the long sound. According to tradition, the beginning note and the last note, which is the long tekiya, needs to be a bit longer than the middle sounds. In some ways, we could think about it as a long cry followed by a beginning of a breakdown turning into very rapid sobbing, and then the long cry again. So the way you would hear it is like... Rosh Hashanah begins the period of 10 days of repentance, a time in which we try to reestablish our connections spiritually and morally with one another, with God and with the Torah. The commentators told us that hearing the shofar is a wake-up call. It's the sound of an alarm saying, "Wake up! Where have you been?" On a deeper level, the actual mitzvah, the commandment surrounding the shofar, is one of listening. So in order to repent, one needs to tune in and to begin listening once again, be it listening to one's loved ones, friends, community, family, as well as listening to one's inner voice, as well as trying to tune into the presence of God. And all that comes through the exercise of tuning into the sound of the shofar.
Today is Rosh Hashanah, so Happy New Year, everybody. And just so you know, that recording of the shofar was made a week before the start of the holiday. Now, a lot of you recognize this week's sound, and our winner is Janet Solid. Congratulations! We're going to send you a KALW t-shirt. For the rest of you, you'll have another chance to win next week. Ready for your sneak peek? Here we go.
If I want him to go fast, like they are somewhere, and I want him to leave from that era quick, then I would just like make a whistle like... So everybody looking, everybody knows that they need to leave that area. If I want them to come, then I just use simple like, "Come, come, come, come." They know that I need them to come.
Do you know what that is and where we recorded it? Let us know at 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106. If you're right, you might just win a KALW t-shirt. We'll reveal the answer next week on Cross Currents. To find out more, head to our website, or KALW.org, click on Audiograph. Thanks for listening, and thanks for playing. I'm Julie Kay.
That's it for today's Cross Currents from KALW News. Our team includes Leela Day, Audrey Dilling, Sandhya Dirks, Rachel Dornhelm, Ashley Ann Kriegbaum, Holly J. McDeed, Colin Peden, Seth Samuel, Raja Shah, and Stephen Short. Today's show was engineered by Chris Hoff. Our line producer was Nina Gensler-Debs. Our senior producers are Julie Kane and Jen Chien. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. And you are a big part of our show, and we'd love to hear from you. Email us at news@kalw.org, or you can find us on Facebook and Twitter at KALW. Because of your support, we can proudly say we are listener-supported radio. This band is the Alphabet Rockers. They're the first of three bands taking part in the 6th annual Tricycle Music Fest on Sunday. They'll be appearing in front of the Excelsior Branch Library in San Francisco at 11 a.m. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.
Jumping off your seat, fingers, arms, and Shake it with the left, shake it with the right. Cross down, right to left, back up. You're the best. Drop.